Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back, everybody, on this Tuesday afternoon. Chad Hartman with you on CCL. Let's talk with someone we've chatted with a couple times before, Professor Stephen Vladeck from the University of Texas, on where we are going in the impeachment process. We know we already had testimony in front of the Intelligence Committee, and we are now moving to the Judiciary Committee. The professor is at Texas, as I said. He is with the A. Dalton Cross Professor in Law at University of Texas School of Law. His teaching and research focuses on federal jurisdiction, constitutional law, national security law, and military justice. Stephen, thanks so much for your time. I greatly appreciate it. Just take us through the process. Is this, from what you've seen about what took place with the Intelligence Committee and now moving to the Judiciary Committee, the normal process you would have expected?
So I think there's one difference from the past, which is, you know, historically impeachment really has gone through the Judiciary Committee first and foremost. But, you know, I think it's not unusual here to have gone with the Intelligence Committee first, because so much of, you know, the particular material at issue involves foreign intelligence, the conduct of foreign relations, the Ukraine scandal. And so I actually think that, you know, even though it's a factual distinction from prior proceedings, it's one that makes sense in context, you know, given the subject matter of what the House has been looking into.
The information was being finalized last night from the Intelligence Committee. And then within about 36 hours, the hearings are starting in the Judiciary Committee. Is that out of the ordinary in any way?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, these kinds of processes tend to move pretty quickly. You know, I think the reality is that the president, I think we saw yesterday in a letter sent by White House counsel Pat Cipollone, that the president's once again, you know, refusing to participate in the process. I think if he were more actively participating, I think there'd be more of a case for slowing down and ensuring that he had, you know, the time to participate the way he wanted to. But, I mean, I think at this point, you know, the real question is whether there's anyone in the House whose minds are left to be made up. That is
right.
To say,
sure.
You know, I think there's plenty of stuff in the House intelligence report that forms a prima facie case for impeachment if you believe that the conduct the House Intelligence Committee is documenting, you know, rises to the level of impeachable offenses. And so I think, you know, given that it's going to be pretty hard to shake folks off of their priors, you know, I'm not sure much is gained by delaying at this point. I think moving pretty quickly makes a lot of sense.
Okay, so three constitutional experts will be a part of this process. Three were selected by Democrats, one by Republicans. How will this play out starting tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, so this is, you know, this is the sort of the con law nerd hearing tomorrow, as opposed to what we saw from the Intelligence Committee, which is more fact witnesses. So here we have, you know, real constitutional law experts, Noah Feldman at Harvard Law School, Pam Carlin from Stanford Law School, you know, Mike Gerhardt, who is advising the House on impeachment matters and is at North Carolina. The Republican witness, Jonathan Turley, has been, you know, pretty vocal on these issues.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think the idea here is for the Judiciary Committee to build a record about the potential constitutional law implications of this process. And so that means both substance and procedure. Are there, you know, meaningful substantive conclusions the Judiciary Committee can add to the factual conclusions of the Intelligence Committee with regard to what the Constitution means by, you know, high crimes and other misdemeanors? Are there meaningful constitutional procedural objections to any of the process to date? You know, the president's supporters have been very loud in suggesting that there are. I think some of tomorrow's hearing will, you know, be an effort to dispel that critique. So, you know, I think we're going to learn a lot tomorrow about the underlying constitutional law. The point, though, I think, is that the factual predicates for all of this have really been laid, you know, in the prior work of the Intelligence Committee.
Professor Stephen Vladeck is with us about what's going to start tomorrow, as the impeachment process moves over to the Judiciary Committee. So, sir, is this typical of most committees where one witness is up, makes an opening statement. The chair and the ranking member speak out, and then there are more questions back and forth. Is that the way this goes? Will all four witnesses appear? Just take me through that type of kind of the tick-tock of what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, usually at a hearing like this, and I've testified probably about a dozen times in congressional hearings, although none quite like this one.
But, yeah, this one's rather unique.
So the usual MO is, you know, that the chairman and the ranking member both get to make opening statements. Then each of the witnesses get to make their own opening statement. That's usually about 5 minutes. And then the floor is usually open to questions. I mean, you know, it's not sort of an open floor. Folks, you know, the members take their turns. I suspect there will also be questions from counsel for the committee and counsel for the minorities on the committee. But, you know, this is going to be basically much the same process we saw in the Intelligence Committee with back and forth questioning of the witnesses, you know, by different members of the committee.
When we're talking about the four individuals who are going to speak, again, three selected by the Democrats, one by the Republicans, do you believe that when we're looking at how the Democrats and Republicans view this and the differences are so stark and so dramatic, do you expect we're going to see those type of differences from these constitutional law experts, or is this going to be more subtlety and more nuance?
I hope it's the latter. I fear it'll be the former. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that sort of has disappointed me the most about the process to date is just how it's two completely different conversations. It's almost as if, you know, no one's talking about the same stuff. The
Correct.
Democrats are focused on the president's conduct vis-a-vis Ukraine. You know, the Republicans are focused on President Obama's conduct vis-a-vis Ukraine and the Bidens. The tone will be a little different tomorrow. I don't think it'll be quite that sharp, but I do think we're going to see, you know, a lot of discussion tomorrow of the, you know, purported procedural objections to how the House has been proceeding that we've heard from the president and his supporters, you know, efforts perhaps to get especially the Republican witness, Professor Turley, to vindicate or endorse those objections. And so I think it'll be, you know, it'll be not quite the sort of sharp tone and, you know, good for sort of soundbite clips that we got from the Intelligence Committee hearings, but it's going to be, I think, a real concerted effort on the part of the president's supporters to try to make this a constitutional objection to impeachment as opposed to just a political one. And, you know, on the converse, from the Democrats' perspective, to basically try to drive home the point that from a constitutional perspective, everything that's happened thus far has been by the book.
You wrote recently about this when the president and fellow Republicans continue to cite the Sixth Amendment and say, and they will say the president is not getting that equal protection. And you wrote, here's the headline at least, but I want you to give us details. Republicans' Sixth Amendment impeachment objection has ominous implications. What are those implications?
Yeah, I mean, so it's worth stressing that the underlying charge is that the president's being denied his right to confront witnesses against him,
sure,
principally because he hasn't been allowed to confront the whistleblower, the person who really sort of started the whole Ukraine kerfuffle. You know, if folks actually just pull out a copy of the Sixth Amendment, the first four words are "in all criminal prosecutions, dot, dot, dot," right? So there's a long line of precedent that suggests it doesn't apply in contexts that are not criminal prosecutions, and what the House is doing is not a criminal prosecution. Not even the trial in the Senate, which at least looks more like a criminal trial, is a criminal prosecution. So, you know, the concern that I tried to raise in that piece is that those who are sort of knowingly making an argument that they know to be false, right, that the Sixth Amendment might apply in this context, are trying to basically move the Overton window on what is a debate, what is a reasonable constitutional position, so that the unreasonable increasingly looks reasonable. And, you know, the bottom line, I think, that I hope folks take away from this is, you know, we will have our own very strong political views about the president, what he's done, whether it is or is not impeachable. But the idea that the Constitution somehow precludes the House from doing what it's done so far, or somehow, you know, gives the president procedural rights in the House that haven't been protected, is just not a serious contention at this point.
Well, so let me just pick up on that, because when people who are in Congress or others who are speaking about this, and they are legally trained, and they're saying this, are they just flat out lying, or is there wiggle room of interpretation?
So, I mean, I think it depends on the exact claim. On the Sixth Amendment claim, they're just lying. I mean, there's just no reasonable argument. You know, we talk a lot in law school and we talk a lot in the legal profession about, non-frivolous arguments to change existing law. So, if you're a lawyer, you can be sanctioned for making an argument in court that is frivolous.
Yep.
And the standard for lawyers is, are you making a good faith argument that has at least some basis, not in existing law, but in the possibility that the law might change to accommodate your position? And when it comes to the notion that the Sixth Amendment and these other constitutional provisions somehow protect the president in the House on the impeachment side of this process, there's just no good faith argument to make that that's true. There's no precedent to support that. And so I think, it's lying is a strong word. I think in mm-hmm. some cases, part of what we're seeing is perhaps lawyers who have convinced themselves that something is true that it isn't. But I still think it's dangerous because I think, we can all agree to disagree about the politics of impeachment without distorting what the law is.
Professor, interesting information. Well stated. Thank you so much for coming on. We definitely will reach out again.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Professor Stephen Vladek, he is excellent from the University of Texas. He's spoken out on issues like this for years and years and well-regarded by many of his peers. I know I'm getting reaction here through text. If you want to continue that, you certainly can. 651-989-9226 tomorrow when the hearings begin. We'll provide you updates from CBS, and we'll also talk about it within the context of the show. Back in moments on WCCO.